Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Harwood of CNBC, and this is On Point. In midterm elections, voters give a report card on incumbent presidents and often limit their power. Bill Clinton's Democrats lost control of Congress in the Republican Revolution of 1994. George W. Bush's Republicans lost it back in 2006. In 2010, it was Barack Obama's turn for a shellacking. What will 2018 bring Donald Trump? His poll numbers are terrible, and some senior Republicans are retiring. But Congress passed President Trump's tax cuts, the Dow setting records, and unemployment's low. A year from now, will Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell be setting the agenda, or Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer? This hour on Point, the high-stakes battle for control of Congress. You can join us on air or online. Can Democrats gain the 24 seats they need for a majority? If they do, might they impeach this Republican president? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Now, joining me now from Washington is Amy Walter. She's national editor of the Cook Political Report. Amy, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, John.
Before I start, Amy, I want to just play a headline from an election that wasn't well-known nationally, but it happened last night in the state of Wisconsin. Democrat Patty Shachner scored a win in a state Senate seat in a longtime Republican district. She won 55-45%. Here's Rick Kramer of Wisconsin Public Radio with the details.
The seat had been held by longtime Republican Senator Sheila Harsdorff since 2001. She won re-election in 2016 by 26 percentage points. President Trump carried the district by 17 percentage points that same year.
Amy, that struck me as a straw in the wind for the kind of year it's shaping up to be. Of course, we're only in January. What do you think when you step back and look at the entire political landscape?
Well, John, this really does continue a trend that we've seen throughout 2017 in some of these special elections, both for the legislature, for governor, and also for Congress, which is that Democrats are simply more engaged, more likely to turn out to vote. They are turning out to vote at a higher level than Republicans, and they are outperforming their average vote in districts that are light blue, dark red, light red, purple. They simply are fired up and they are turning out. And that should be a big flashing warning sign for Republicans that it's not that, you know, their base is not they don't like Donald Trump. They still do. But that they aren't turning out in the way that Democrats are. And to me, you know, I think politics is as much about who shows up as who doesn't. And in 2016, we heard a lot about the people that showed up, some of them for the first time to support President Trump, many of them in these small towns or rural areas. And a lot of the folks who had supported Democrats, especially President Obama in 2008 and 2012, stayed at home. This year, it's Republicans who have the enthusiasm problem. They may still get many of their voters to say they support the president, but it's Democrats who are fired up, who are engaged in a way that we haven't seen in midterm elections. Certainly, we didn't see this level of engagement in the Obama era. And that's just a really, really big problem for a party that holds the White House going into a midterm election.
Now, Amy, one of the ways we, those of us who cover politics, shorthand the difference between a huge election and a more moderate range of results is we talk about wave elections.
Right.
Have you seen enough as of January 2018 to say that we are headed for a wave election, or is it too early to say that?
It's definitely a wave election. The only question is how big the wave is. So, You know, it's a little bit like standing on the shore and you're looking a mile out and you see something out there that's building. You just can't quite figure out if it's going to be, you know, a foot tall, 3 feet tall, 10 feet tall at this stage of the game. The funny thing, too, John, is that, you know, I've been in Washington since 1991, covered 6 midterm elections. In those 6 midterms, there have been 4 what you just described as wave elections, where one side just dominates the other, picking up anywhere from 30. In one case, we had 63 seats in 2010. And so waves have now become something of the norm rather than this sort of unique experience we only see once every couple decades. And I think that goes to the real issue here, which is our deepening polarization. Voters are really aligned with their party, not so much because they love their party, but because they hate the other party more, or the other person who represents that party even more. And the fact that when one party has been in charge of all three branches, as Republicans are now, as Democrats were in 1994 or in 2010, they tend to push legislation, policies that are much more to the liking of their base rather than to the middle. They tend to overreach. They tend to overestimate their mandate from the previous election. And voters in the next election want to say they want the other party to serve as a check, that the other side just went way too far and it's going to take the other party to hold them to account.
Well, I'd say it also reflects the fact that we have experienced stagnating living standards for quite a long time. And so people stay in a discontented mood and they just acquire different targets for their discontent.
That is fair as well, that if somebody can't fix it today, then I'm going to find somebody else to try to fix it tomorrow. And, you know, every year one candidate or the other says they're going to have the answer. And every year, voters are disappointed. The other big difference, of course, John, is that it's not just about policies that people are frustrated about in 2018. It's really unique to this president. It's his personality. It's his temperament. It's his style, more so than even the policies that Republicans are pursuing, that is really driving this intensity.
Now, one of the things that we thought we had learned in the recent past was that the way people cluster themselves with like-minded people, the way district lines are drawn by politicians, that there are very few competitive districts, and therefore it would become increasingly harder for one party or the other to flip control of a chamber, especially after the 2010 redistricting, hard to dislodge Republicans. And yet people are talking about Democrats as having a pretty good chance of taking over the House. What does that reflect? Is that just the size of the wave that we're contemplating?
Yeah, that's a great question and a great point. If the playing field or the political environment is relatively even, in other words, Democrats, Republicans viewed sort of in the same way, that we don't have this intense feelings about the president, especially intensely negative. Remember, this is a president, not only does he have low approval ratings, but his very strong disapproval ratings are twice as high as his very strong approval ratings. But if this were a president who were sort of just kind of a boring, middle-of-the-road kind of guy with 52%.
Low-energy guy.
Low energy guy with 53% approval rating, you know, we would be looking at a traditional sort of a level playing field. And you're right, Democrats would have a really hard time overcoming the partisanship in these districts, the way that both the districts have been drawn and the way that Democrats have clustered in cities and college towns and inner suburban areas. But what we know, of course, is that the intensity matters because it means that you're going to get turnout among Democrats or independents who lean Democrat higher than you would get in a quote-unquote normal midterm year. Republican enthusiasm may be down, which means they don't turn out at the same level. And independents get turned off, the same independents who might have been willing to vote for a member of the party in the White House. They decide, I don't know, this seems a little too risky for me, or I really need to put a check on the person in the White House.
And the thing is, when you turn all three of those dials at the same time, you can move big numbers.
It moves big numbers. And, you know, it's funny. I went back and I looked at the last time Democrats won control in a wave election. That, of course, was 2006. George W. Bush was president. He was very unpopular. Republicans in Congress, very unpopular. For the president, it was Iraq. For Congress, there were a series of scandals happening that year. But it's not that there are fewer districts for Democrats, that like there were many more competitive districts in 2006. It's just that those competitive districts in 2006 wouldn't be considered competitive if the president were more popular, if Republicans in Congress were more popular. And in fact, I think what we're looking at this year is not that the map has changed so dramatically between 2006 and now, or 2010 and now. It's that the battlegrounds have changed. So in 2006, the fight for control of Congress was in places like central Indiana and southern Ohio and in upstate New York. This year, it's in suburban areas like Orange County, California, and central New Jersey, and in some places that we've never seen competitive races before. But, you know, suburban Chicago, suburban Denver, those are the kinds of seats that we weren't talking about back in 2006.
Amy, hold that thought. We're going to come right back after a short break. We're talking about the November midterm elections that will determine control of Congress in 2019. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Hey, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of NPR's Latino USA, the podcast that takes you inside the Latino conversation. Each week, we'll take you into one story that will fascinate and often surprise you. Listen to Latino USA on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood. We're talking about the 2018 midterm elections, which could determine whether President Trump gets a second win or finds his agenda stopped cold. You can join the conversation. Will voters reward Republicans for their tax plan or punish them? I'm talking with Amy Walter, national editor of the Cook Political Report, and I now want to turn to bright young strategists for each party. Matt Gorman's the communications director for the National Republican Congressional Committee. Matt Gorman, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, John.
And Meredith Kelly holds the same job for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Meredith Kelly, welcome to On Point.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
I want to start, Meredith, by playing a clip. Since Amy has given us what sounds like a pretty optimistic picture for your party, I want to give you a little reality check from Bernie Sanders in June. He was interviewed on CNN's Anderson Cooper about how both parties are doing. Take a listen.
The Democratic brand is pretty bad. I mean, I think the Trump brand is also pretty bad, as is the Republican brand. That's why so many people are giving up on politics. They're looking in Washington, and what the average American is saying, I'm in a lot of pain. My kid can't afford to go to college. I'm making 10 bucks an hour. What are you going to do for me? And they don't hear much coming out of Washington.
Meredith, how much is the kind of feeling that Bernie Sanders was reflecting there going to constrain your ability to make big gains this fall?
Well, listen, John, it's an important question. There's no doubt that we learned after the 2016 elections that Democrats need to do more to show voters whose side they're on, and that Democrats are the ones that are out there every single day fighting for everyday Americans, trying to increase more money in their pockets, increase their wages, and help them make ends meet. And you noted that that quote from Senator Sanders was back in June. I think Democrats have been working really hard to show voters that they are on their side, on the middle-class American side. Meanwhile, House Republicans have been aiding us in the effort of showing voters whose side is, which party is on their side, by working every single day to try to rip away their health care and increase their costs, and by passing into law one of the most unpopular bills in the last 30 years, the Republican tax scam, as I call it. It's a bill that went out of its way to benefit the rich and the big corporations and donors at the expense of the middle class. So time and again, while Democrats are showing voters through their own actions whose side they're on, Republicans are distancing themselves.
Now, Meredith, isn't some of the polling for the tax plan ticking up as people get closer and closer to finding some tax cut in their paychecks?
Well, first of all, it was a very, very low bar. They had nowhere to go but up. And I've still seen polls as recently as last week from Quinnipiac that show that 52% of Americans disapprove of that bill, and about two-thirds still believe that accurately that it prioritizes the very rich and the biggest corporations rather than the middle class. So I think it's one of the least popular bills to pass Congress and signed into law in the last 30 years. And it's very much baked in who the Republicans value. They've laid their values out on the line over the last year during 2017 with their agenda. And time and again, they've prioritized the very rich, their donors, the special interests, and the biggest corporations. And listen, Republicans, my counterpart Matt here may tell you that they're going to go out there and sell this bill to the American people. Don't forget,
expect he will say that.
Yeah. Don't forget two things. First of all, they've already spent over $70 million, the Republicans, on selling this bill even before it passed. And if anything, it got less popular. And voters know that 83% of the benefits of this bill go to the top 1%. They did nothing to unrig this system and that currently favors the special interests. They made it more in favor of the rich and the biggest corporations.
Now, Matt, before I let you respond to that question on taxes, I want to bring you in with a little clip from Republican Congressman Charlie Dent of Pennsylvania. He's one of a substantial number of Republicans who have decided not to run for re-election this year. He told CNN last month that President Trump will make it harder for Republicans in November.
We're in a very challenging midterm environment. You know, the party of the president typically loses about 32 seats in a midterm like right. this. So I think most of my colleagues are well aware of the historical challenges that we face. Of course, then Donald Trump, complicates that because he's a very polarizing figure. Mm-hmm. And so I suspect that our challenges will be even greater just because of that.
Matt, is Charlie Dent right?
Look, I think this is going to be a choice. I think this is going to be a choice between the great American comeback and going back to the days of Nancy Pelosi as Speaker, when they had higher spending, higher taxes, more economic stagnation. As you said, John, before, the Dow was at record highs. Unemployment is low. We were growing at almost 4% GDP in December. And, talking about tax reform, certainly we're going to sell it. We're going to sell tax reform in every part of this country. But you look at the local news, they're doing the job for us in a lot of respects. Southwest Airlines, PNC Bank, AT&T, Comcast, they're giving increased wages to their workers. They're getting bonuses, helping out with 401ks. And, that's why tax reform, as you said before, is we just went in the poll into the field last week of the poll. It's right side up and rising. And this is the same type of stuff that last week Nancy Pelosi called crumbs. So if Meredith wants to talk about who's in touch with everyday Americans, I like to think that Republicans who help, making sure they have increased wages and bonuses are much more in touch. And their leader's calling it crumbs, a multimillionaire. Leader Pelosi, it might be crumbs for her, but certainly not for, according to our data, the roughly 50% of Americans who are living paycheck to paycheck.
Matt,
34. Yep.
If things are going so well, why is Donald Trump, and we know presidential approval is a very powerful indicator of midterm election results, why is President Trump the least popular first-year president in modern history?
Well, let's back up for a second, because you look at where President Trump is and correlating to his fave on fave from last year in 2016. You know, Democrats talked about how they were going to run against Donald Trump. Just a month before Election Day, they were talking about how they were going to win 30 seats. As we saw, that was couldn't be further from the truth. And I think that's because, you know, voters consistently vote on what's affecting them directly, you know, whether, again, that's more money in their paycheck. But you look at local issues across this country, that's why, you know, people like Barbara Comstock, Carlos Curbelo, John Katko have been successful, and they have won convincingly in these Clinton districts that Hillary Clinton carried, because they talk about issues that are important to the voters in that district, whether it's Comstock talking about the metro, Carlos Curbelo talking about the environment, John Katko talking about airport security, the opioids. People aren't worried about – people aren't concerned about what's the outrage on cable news or on Twitter of the day. They're talking about real issues that affect them.
Amy, I invite you to apply your spin detector to Matt's description of people being focused on things other than what those of us in the media are focused on. And Meredith's assessment that Republicans have entrenched their brand in a negative way that they simply can't turn around.
Well, I think both of them make really good points. And this is going to be the challenge, you know, or for those listeners now who sit in a district that may be competitive, this is the choice that they're going to be given in November. Democrats will come out and say that, you know, Republicans have decided to put the priorities of other people, not the middle class, but big rich people and corporations. And then in the health care bill, they didn't really try to solve your health care problems. They were going to make things worse by passing a health care bill that went after people with pre-existing conditions. There was an age tax, et cetera. So it's going to be, you know, Republicans not on your side, and Republicans hoping that by making the case that the economy is getting better and that Democrats are even worse, you think, I know you might not like Donald Trump, but Nancy Pelosi, come on, that's going to be terrible, that that will be enough to energize recalcitrant or maybe disillusioned Republicans. But I do think that, the real challenge is that overlying all of this is Donald Trump. Now, every midterm election is a referendum on the person in the White House. And every election, especially we see in these wave elections, the party in the White House, their members of Congress say, I'm going to distinguish myself from that president. I'm going to talk about what I'm doing. And I'm going to be able to distance myself from the unpopular. I'm popular myself. What we saw in 2010, for example, Democrats who said, I didn't vote for the health care bill, Democrats who say, look at all the votes I've taken against the president, lost. In 2006, I saw a lot of Republicans saying, I didn't support George W. Bush on XYZ. They lost. Some of these candidates are good who are sitting in, who are incumbents today, who are Republicans, who will survive a very bad year. A lot of them will not, regardless of how strong of a campaign they run. The real question, I think, and the big difference between even where we were in 2010 and today is indeed this deep antipathy between Democrats and Republicans, right? That one side hates the other side so very much that
that is enough. Sounds like Matt and Meredith get along okay.
They do. Washington is unique in that. But, you know, when you look, for example, the Pew Research Center has been asking the question for quite some time now, you know, do you think that the Democrat or the Republican Party is a threat to the well-being of the nation? Or do you strongly approve, strongly disapprove? And when you ask Democrats and you ask Republicans whether they strongly disapprove or just disapprove, the strongly disapprove has ticked up dramatically over the last 10 years. And I do wonder if that is ultimately enough to help Republicans overcome what is, a very unpopular president despite very good times.
Well, I do think, as you suggest, Amy, it strikes me in this environment, impossible to effectively localize. People can try. Maybe they can mitigate problems. But you can't fundamentally make it local. I want to go to the phones. We've got Matt on the line from Edmond, Oklahoma. Matt, welcome to On Point. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, my concern is that we're talking about this great big wave of...
Matt, you still there? Oh, darn. Let me suggest the point that I think Matt was about to get to, which was overconfidence, that Democrats are assuming there's going to be a big wave and it may not materialize. Meredith, are you concerned about that? The Democrats may sit here in January and say, we're rolling, and not do what they need to do?
I can speak for the DCCC where I work, and I can tell you that we are taking every step of this cycle very seriously. From the beginning, we've known that there'd be a lot of opportunity and energy out there, especially after President Trump was inaugurated. And we wanted to do everything we could to prepare for and harness that energy and work it in our favor so that we can take back the House in November of 2018. But we do not assume that a wave is coming. We are banking on strategies and developing strategies that will allow us to win the 24 seats we need, regardless of there being a wave. It's really hard. There's no doubt about it. Amy did a great job laying out the difficulties, and you did, John, of the map. These are drawn by Republicans, these districts in favor of Republicans. So we have structural disadvantages. But we have been taking steps to put the House in play. We've built the largest battlefield in a decade since the 2006 cycle. We are targeting 90 Republican-held districts and recruiting incredible candidates with records of service, whether they be veterans, State Department officials, people with healthcare stories, job creators, and many other really important connections to these districts. But we are going to work every day to earn one vote at a time and one district at a time, and we are taking nothing for granted.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Roland on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. Roland, welcome to On Point. What's your question?
I just wanted to say, kind of push back on how they're characterizing the tax bill as leaving behind the middle class and only serving the rich. I just did my taxes, and I can assure you I'm firmly in the middle class. And I struggled to get even $10,000 in deductions, and I deducted my mortgage. Had a kid last year. Next year, I can take the standard deduction and get more than that just, you know, right off the bat. Doubling my child, I get twice as much for my kid next year, too. I don't see how that's not helping the middle class.
Roland, thanks for your call. Matt, are you confident that the combination of those structural barriers we were talking about from the redistricting process and the neighborhoods people live in and with like-minded people, and people like Roland who are all of a sudden going to feel their wallets a little bit heavier now, is that going to provide a big enough barrier to protect you?
Yeah, it's not crumbs, Roland, huh? That's real money in your pocket. I mean, obviously, doubling the standard deduction, tax breaks for the middle class. Like, this is what actually we're looking to do. We're looking to help people put more money back in their pockets. I know Amy talked about legislation that, you know, people push that is way too far to the left or right. You know, this is something that benefits everyone. This is something that, you know, again, as I was saying before, John, 50% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. 34% are $400 away from personal economic collapse. That's a fridge. That's a water heater. So putting a little more money in their pockets is going to be huge for them. And again, we've seen the dividends already. And I think, you know, this is going to be a very big choice. And we talked a lot of, you talk a lot about Trump, but in every single district, competitive district we poll, the most unpopular politician by far is Nancy Pelosi, not just among the base, but about independents as well. And the intensity that people disapprove of her is off the charts high. And that's why when we went in Georgia 6, which people haven't talked about, you want to talk about a competitive special election in a swing district that Trump only won by a point and a half? Let's talk about Georgia 6. You know, 90% of our ads invoke Nancy Pelosi. And I mean, Paul Ryan went down there and did an event in front of, with Karen Handel. When was the last time you saw Nancy Pelosi appear in a swing district and do a public event with a candidate? I can't think of one. So I think that's why, again, there's going to be a real choice whether we're going to have this American comeback, which Roland is proof positive of, and going back to the days of Nancy Pelosi.
Meredith, are you going to hide Nancy Pelosi this fall?
Well, first of all, let me address a few things. I'm very happy for Roland that he'll have more money in his pocket. That's very good for him. Unfortunately, for a lot of people, once this bill is fully phased in, they will see a tax hike. The Tax Policy Center estimates that once this bill is fully implemented, 53% of people, that's about 100 million households in the country, will see a tax hike. And guess what the percentage of those 100 million households, about 92 million make less than $200,000 a year as a family, and are very much in the suburbs. And that is exactly where our battlefield is. So California, New York, New Jersey. And those people don't need to wait. They know that this tax bill unfairly targeted them. So I'm really happy for Roland. But unfortunately, that's not going to be the case across the country.
We will talk on the other side about whether you're going to hide Nancy Pelosi, which is the last point that Matt made. We've got Meredith Kelly, Communications Director for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, Matt Gorman, Communications Director for the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee, Amy Walter, the Cook Political Report. We're looking ahead to the 2018 midterm elections. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
Hello, just dropping in to remind you about Here and Now. We cover the day's most essential news with context so you know the why and what's next. A fast-paced snapshot of the world every day. Listen to Here and Now on NPR One or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood. We're talking about midterm elections and control of Congress. You can join the conversation. What will affect your vote in November? Do you want a calmer 2018 or a partisan fight? I'm talking with Amy Walter, national editor of the Cook Political Report, with Matt Gorman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, and Meredith Kelly with the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. I want to start, guys, because before the break, we mentioned Virginia and Alabama. Virginia, where a Democratic governor won, they picked up a bunch of state legislative seats. The Alabama Senate race that a Democrat won, surprisingly. And there's been some debate over to what extent those are signs of what's going to happen in 2018 or aberrations. Last month, Matt's boss, Ohio Congressman Steve Stivers, who chairs the NRCC, was asked on MSNBC whether those Democratic victories were a sign of what Republicans face in 2018.
We are making preparations and we're trying to make sure we're ready, but I don't think that we can overestimate both Virginia and Alabama. Virginia was a blue state. It got a little bluer, and Alabama was a Roy Moore problem.
I want to get each of my guests just to address briefly the signal versus noise question. First of all, Meredith, do you think Democrats are overinterpreting what happened in those two places or not?
Well, John, I think it's not just Virginia and Alabama. Race after race, from the state level to the congressional level to the statewide level, there have been dramatic trends and shifts in Democrats' favor from only the November 2016 results. So that is not a blip in the that is not, you know, the exception. This is a repeated trend, starting even including the special elections that we did not win, and a loss is a loss. But in Georgia, that Matt mentioned earlier, and every other race in 2017, all the way up to the Wisconsin state Senate race that you mentioned that happened last night, Democrats have made dramatic gains. And if those trends hold up, we will take back the House. And one other point on Georgia 6, if that election were held today, we would win it.
Matt?
Okay. Let's talk about Georgia 6 then, because I think that's the most apt
comparison.
Well,
no, but let's talk about Virginia and Alabama.
Hold on. Well, I mean, Alabama, I mean, I think I agree with Chairman Stivers. You know, Alabama was a Roy Moore problem. I think everyone can agree on that. And in Virginia, it was a Democratic state. Hillary won it by 5 and it got a little bluer. But if you want to look again, we're talking about the House here. Georgia 6 was the most competitive special election. It was in a district Trump won by 1.5 points. Tom Perez said the blue wave is going to start in Georgia. Democrats, including the DCCC, said this was the type of suburban seat they need to win the House. And, you know, we had a divided GOP primary, which Karen Handel eventually emerged as the nominee. The Democratic whole party coalesced immediately behind John Ossoff. They spent $30 million, 30 in a congressional seat. They were outspent us by $10 million, and we still won. You know, look, I think that certainly Democrats are energized. There's absolutely no question of that. But as Georgia 6 showed, okay, we can win tight, tough elections And also, the GOP is just as, if not more, energized, and that special election is proof positive.
Amy, BS detector, please.
Look, candidates matter and campaigns matter. So I don't think you can completely dismiss either one of those things, even in a wave election. So having Roy Moore as your standard bearer is a terrible thing. And any other Republican candidate would have been able to hold on there. But I do think that underneath it all, what you're seeing in every single one of these special elections and what you saw in Virginia was a turnout differential that it should be worrying for Republicans. The intensity that I've talked about before between those voters who had supported Democrats in the past, who maybe traditionally don't turn out in midterm elections, are coming out, and they're coming out in much bigger numbers than Republicans. So that's really the question. And I think to Matt's point, what the goal is, the hope is that for as unpopular as Donald Trump is to Democrats, Nancy Pelosi is to Republicans, and that the ability to tie Pelosi to Democrats is going to be able to energize Republicans, even if they're not energized by anything else. That, you know, again, that's a strategy. I think it's what they have. You got to work with what you have rather than pretending than trying to create something you don't have or pretending there's no problem. So I think that's a fair strategy. The question of, you know, whether that can break through when Donald Trump is the dominant force in politics now.
We use this term, those of us who follow and participate in politics, performance for how a district or an election goes relative to how it usually goes. And you look at these charts in race after race, and the Democratic performance is up 10, 15, 20 points. That strikes me as indicating something reasonably broad.
It is. But the other thing I do want to point out, and I think that Matt and Republicans are also going to be talking a lot about in 2018, is whether Democrats overreach. This idea that they're going to spend way too much time talking about Russia, talking about impeachment, talking about censure, talking about cultural and social issues, not talking about the kinds of issues that really motivate and drive voters, especially swing voters. And if in these primaries, we've seen the good news for Democrats, a whole bunch of Democrats want to run for Congress, even in districts they hadn't contested in the past. The bad news is they could get a candidate coming out of that primary that either doesn't fit the district particularly well or has views or, their background just doesn't really align with where the district is. So that's another problem potentially for Democrats. They really do need to make the case not that Trump is a terrible person, you need to go and just vote against Donald Trump, but that they, Democrats, have a solution, that they understand what it is that voters are looking for beyond just, you know, making claims about the president and his mental or physical or whatever sort of fitness.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We've got Diane on the line from Corning, New York. Diane, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John. I'm in the New York 23rd District, which is Representative Tom Reed, who's a Republican. He served on Trump's one of the transition teams. He, he's on all sorts of different caucuses and things. I have lived here my whole life, and we have always been a Republican district. And to tell the truth, I don't know that I ever really voted in any midterm elections because, to be perfectly honest, it kind of didn't matter. We, thanks to New York City, I mean, I'm a Democrat. We always, you know, swing Democrat. I mean, we've got Schumer and Gillibrand in the Senate. And so, you know, a couple of House districts, you know, here or there, whatever, in the end, the policies that I wanted to see were happening. And that is not the case now. This is the first time I have ever seen anybody, you know, so many people in this area so fired up. Because as much as Roland, I believe it was, as much as I'm happy that he got his, you know, going to get a little bit more in his taxes, and I am too, to tell the truth. As a teacher, I let my husband know we hit the sweet spot. You know, we're going to get a little more. But none of my students' families are, and everyone around here is suffering. And in the last year, ever since, you know, the big pink wave down in down to the White House the day after inauguration, there are 5 indivisible chapters in this area. I have never seen everybody so fired up. I have 3 carloads of people going to Seneca Falls, you know, this weekend. We have 11 people who are vying to be the Democratic candidate. We are looking really hard because, you know, Trump does not represent what we want. And the fact that he's been, you know, policy-wise, in lockstep with Donald Trump has really not helped the case at all. So, I hear about overreaching and everything. Watch us overreach.
Diane, thanks so much for calling. Matt, if you're Tom Reed and you are looking out and seeing the kind of energy that Diane was describing, how do you deal with it? How do you respond?
Well, again, I think, you know, this is going to be a choice. And I think continuing on to the point, and I think as she was saying, you know, getting more money in the paycheck, I think that's going to help, you know, convince a lot of these people who are independents and the like that, you know, this agenda is working for them. They're putting more money in their pockets. And if you want to talk about energy on the Democratic side, I think, you know, there's certainly you talk about opportunity with it, but there's also, you know, a big downfall. You know, there are massive, massive Democratic primaries going on across the country. You know, we have 8, 10, sometimes 10, more than 10 Democratic candidates in a lot of these seats. And so there's going to be litmus tests. As Bernie Sanders has said, you know, single-payer health care is a litmus test. And, you know, so what you're going to see is, you know, the DCCC and the kind of Washington establishment try and pick, you know, their standard bearer in these Democratic primaries. And it's going to anger a lot of the far left and the Bernie base. And, you know, they're going to pull the entire field to the left. So I'm, you know, and when you come back to the general election, these people are going to be totally unelectable in these moderate or swing districts. So I think it's going to be, you know, a problem for them as well in the long run, you know, with these massive primary fields.
Matt, let me explore that question of Democrats going to the left a little bit more by playing this clip from Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren. She was firing up progressive activists at Netroots Nation in Atlanta in August.
Now, we are not the gate crashers of today's Democratic Party. We are not a wing of today's Democratic Party. We are the heart and soul of the Democratic Party.
So, Meredith Kelly, are you comfortable trying to win a majority of districts all around the country? We've talked before about Nancy Pelosi as one symbolic leader for your party. What about the combination of Nancy Pelosi and Elizabeth Warren? Is that something that is would provide a winning message in districts that you need to win?
Well, listen, first of all, back to something that Amy said a few minutes ago. Candidates, campaigns, and energy matter, and all of those things are on Democrats' side this cycle. Time and again, proof point after proof point, it's very clear we have the advantage on the candidates and the campaigns and the energy. And on to your question, no party has ever lost because they have too much energy. This is a lot of Republican spin, if we're being honest here. There is no evidence of any of our top-tier candidates being forced into unelectable positions on healthcare or anything else. In fact, Bernie said the opposite of what Matt said. He said it is not a litmus test for candidates for Congress. So this is a Republican talking point. And the reality is, yes, there are a lot of candidates running for Congress. That is a sign of the energy. And guess what? Any number of those people could beat Barbara Comstock or Mimi Walters or John Culberson or any number of Republicans, Leonard Lance, who have a real problem on their hands, no matter who gets through the primary.
I'm going to go back to the phones. Got Brian on the line from Madison, Wisconsin. Brian, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hi, John. I'm calling because I'm a little sick and tired of hearing about how the Democrats have the solution and their divisive politics, and the Republicans have a solution and their divisive politics. And I'm really sick and tired of looking at my 5-year-old granddaughter and realizing she owes $40,000 in debt because we have a $22 trillion debt we can't pay off. And nobody's talking about the things and making, you know, everybody better. To me, it's the last 20 years has been a rush to the left, a rush to the right, a rush to the left, a rush to the right. The whole time the whole country's going to hell in a handbasket because, you know, our economy's unsustainable, our debt's unsustainable. And nobody's talking about the things that really matter. That's what I'm sick and tired of. And so I think that, you know, this wave that's coming, going to surprise everybody because it's going to be a wave that's going to knock Congress on its keister. Congress has got the lowest approval rating in history. It has for a long time. Everybody loves their congressman but hates Congress. Well, eventually that's going to change. There's going to be something's got to change.
Brian, thanks so much for your message. And Amy, I want to go to you with this that relates to what Brian was just talking about. Is there anything outside of the major parties that is relevant to the 2018 elections? You know, Steve Bannon, who was the so-called populist strategist within the White House, has now been excommunicated. He has talked about running insurgent campaigns. Is there something outside the two parties that can have a big impact and somehow rattle both of them this year?
Well, we've been seeing, actually, John, for a few years now that there are influences outside the party that are rattling politics. And in some ways, I think it's what's made politics even more polarized, which is the rise of super PACs and billionaires who have these are individuals or groups that have a very specific agenda. Maybe it's just one item and they are going to spend a whole lot of money making sure that issue is front and center. They aren't really particularly interested in the idea of compromise or building a party or building a bigger, longer term strategy. It's very short term. It's very immediate. And I think that's going to continue in 2018. I do think you're right, though, that as we get into 2020, this idea about, you know, is there an alternative to the quote-unquote traditional party candidates will be talked about much more. It's, you know, are you going to see the rise of multiple independent candidates? What's been happening, though, over the course of the last 10, 15 years is insurgent candidates or insurgent movements have essentially been pulled in to one of the parties. So think about these insurgencies as startups and the parties are the big corporations. You know, it's like Microsoft and the insurgents are some nice little startup in somebody's garage. They buy up all of those insurgencies, bring them into the party. And this is why the parties are struggling and why you see these intra-party fights, because they are really just an amalgamation of lots of different constituencies. There's very little that sort of ties them together except for their deep dislike for the other side. And so, you know, unless or until there is someone or something, some movement that can really stay unique and non-attached to the parties, that can build something of momentum, maybe starting at the grassroots level, build its way up.
It sounds like you think that can only happen on the presidential level.
Yes, right now at the presidential level.
Thanks so much. Amy Walters, national editor for the Cook Political Report. Amy, so glad to have you with us. Thank you.
You're welcome, John.
Matt Gorman and Meredith Kelly, communications directors for the Republican and Democratic campaign committees. Thanks so much for making time.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John. This was fun.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, or follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.